Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm Tony Heil, councilman in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is in Montgomery County, which, like many places, right now is quarantined, like so many people in the world. But I'm taking this time to talk with some extraordinary people on my podcast who have run for office. Before I get into today's episode, if you could look back in some of the 50-plus, 60-plus episodes to hear some people from across the country, from Florida to Alaska, nearly everywhere in between, including today with Arizona State Representative Athena Salmon. We're going to talk about some really cool topics, including her motivations and encouragement for being involved in politics. With that in mind, Representative Salmon, I didn't want to take a lot of time to introduce. I want to hear from you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today. Looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you. I was looking you up. I have to say, before I get too far into this, you were recommended to me from Cedar Rapids Councilwoman Ashley Van Orney, who said really good things. And you have a really neat and important background. So first, when did you decide that you wanted to be interested in politics?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up in a very diverse first, second-generation American family. So my mom is born in Chicago, daughter of immigrant parents. My grandmother's from Germany, and my grandfather's from Mexico. And my dad is Palestinian, immigrated to America in the 1970s. So, every single dinner conversation was an interesting conversation. And fortunately, my parents were always paying attention, at least to national politics. I find that a lot of people who are civically engaged look at that level of government. But when I believe I was primed at a young age to have just a natural interest at what elected officials were doing and what our government leaders were doing. I think for me, what got me involved specifically at the state level of government and politics was 11 years ago in 2009, at the second year of the recession. So things had kind of collapsed and we're going into that next year. I was a sophomore at our public university here in Arizona, Arizona State University. And at the time we had a supermajority in the legislature of Republican legislators, and our Democratic governor left the office to join the Obama administration, and so we inherited Jan Brewer, and we just saw so many draconian policies go through the legislature and actually get enacted into law that previously we had some check in the system. We had some balance, having had a governor who was a Democrat in the executive branch. And so when I was in college, it was just a huge wake-up call. I mean, Jan Brewer was kind of my Donald Trump moment where, you know, the massive cuts to public universities and higher education had an immediate impact on my life, on my family's life as a college student, and the version of tuition hikes and hikes in fees and the other costs associated with going to college. I took it very personally at the time, being a first-generation, now college graduate, and I know part of the reason that my parents didn't have that opportunity to, they started college, but they never got to finish college, was because the affordability piece, unfortunately, bars out a lot of people from pursuing that version of the American dream. So I just started organizing. I started getting involved. I started protesting through our local state student association. I learned how to lobby. And even though I was like, you know, a year, 2 years later, even though I was in my early 20s at that point, 20, 21 years old, I found myself in the offices of state legislators, both in the Senate and the House, trying to convince them, trying to get them to see how important higher education was. And I mean, the conversations, there was never a dull conversation, but it became very apparent to me that, you know, there's only so much you can do to change someone's mind when they are not with you on an issue. Mm-hmm. And so I just, I kept trying to find ways to make the state better. And eventually, and we can talk more about that, but eventually that led to me actually running for the state legislature. I ran for office at age 26. I'm turning 31 on Monday. And so, like, I never would have imagined that I would be in my 20s running for public office, especially running for a state leadership position. But I think those experiences I had trying to fight for higher education and constantly running into a brick wall really inspired me to look around and have that voice in my head, if not me, then who, and if not when, then now.
Yeah, I was listening to your talks and looking at your background and just hearing you talk now as a straight white male, age 18 to whatever, I'm well represented in government, and there's never been a time when I had to worry about my own, you know, stake in this world. I feel like for a lot of people with my background, you can go through life kind of casually paying attention to the world or seeing yourself in it in one way. But with your background, your life is inherently political. Your family's life is inherently political, unfortunately, because so many people are trying to make it so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, what I have found over the past decade, just being involved in Arizona with progressive organizing and activism and just politics, is it really takes a community, it really takes a village, and no one community can do it alone. You know, even though we're a state, we're on the border, Arizona, we have a very charged history with racial discrimination, especially against our Latinx community here. You know, when you hear the name Jim Burr, when you hear the name Sheriff Joe, oftentimes that is what comes to mind when people think of Arizona and that discrimination. But just in my firsthand experience, like, the Latinx community couldn't do it alone. The LGBTQ community over here couldn't do it alone. Our disability community, who's constantly fighting for justice and for equity, they couldn't do it alone. So we do rely on just people with different privileges to collectively fight together for a more just and better Arizona. And part of my experience is, you know, building those relationships and friendships and appreciating, especially when people are in a position of privilege, for me, just being an openly atheist in government, for me being the only, although I do identify as Latinx through my Mexican heritage, I am the only Arab American. I'm the first Palestinian American probably to be elected to any public office in Arizona. And, like, so I'm constantly having to rely on and lean on allyship for people who may not fully understand my experience and may not be able to walk completely a mile in my shoes, but it's that empathy, it's that heart, it's that passion, it's that collective understanding of knowing that if we stick together and if we don't leave anyone behind, then we will all win. So it's a constant struggle, but it's worth the fight because of all the amazing people that give you hope that we're in this together.
Well, terrific. And it sounds like you were able to build that movement partly during your run for office. What was some of the hope and challenges with running? The elections in Arizona are different than other states, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate. So we are one of the states, and this happened at our statehood, where we have the citizen initiative process. I think most people on your podcast might know what that is, but just in case, it's a process in which citizens can come together, voters of Arizona, and they can write a law, come up with an idea, and essentially bypass the state legislature to send that law to the ballot, and then ask the voters to codify that law into the statute or to amend the Constitution. And so when I was, you know, when I was still a minor, when I was like in elementary and middle school, the voters of Arizona had done a few crucial democracy reform ideas and policies through the citizen initiative process, and the voters supported these programs overwhelmingly. So I would say the first thing that's important in Arizona is we have the Voter Protection Act, and that means that anything that the voters approve, the legislature can't really touch unless they have a three-fourths majority of the legislators, and even then they have to, the only way they can change it is by making it further the purpose of whatever the voters voted on.
Can you give that to Florida?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's why, you know, I kind of look at what happened in Florida, and I know for a fact that if we did not have the Voter Protection Act, the Republicans here would have already obliterated these pro-democracy reforms that we put into place in the late 90s, early 2000s. So we had that in place, and then either at the same time or after that was approved by the voters, Arizona was, I think, if we weren't the first state, we were one of the first states to pass independent redistricting. So since 2000, it's been an independent commission that has drawn both our legislative boundaries and our congressional boundaries. And while the process is, I mean, you're never going to find any process that's perfect. And since then, there's been many other states that have followed suit and come up with slightly better and improved models of independent redistricting. I would say the fact of the matter is we are not a significantly gerrymandered state because, fortunately, our voters had the wisdom and the wherewithal to understand that politicians shouldn't be drawing their own legislators, like our districts. We shouldn't be choosing our own voters. And then the other thing that we did around the same time period is we are one of two states still to this day that passed a clean elections initiative. And so, you know, you hear Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and these Democratic progressive presidential candidates talk about how we need more small dollars and we need more public monies in elections. Arizona did that a long time ago. And so when I still run clean. So the way our system works in Arizona, it's a little different. And there's a lot of cities that have a version of clean elections at the municipal level. But in Arizona, for a legislative race, if I find 250 voters who live in my district to donate $5 to my campaign, I then turn that over to the state, and then the state matches it with clean money to run the campaign. And so it kind of like bypasses some of the barriers that non-traditional candidates face, whether you're a woman, person of color, working class, just not someone who's coming up from the traditional power structures and power players that be. And it allows us to have capital and funding to run a competitive race. Our system, clean elections in Arizona, definitely needs to be reformed and definitely needs to be fixed so it is more competitive. The Republicans have done a good job over the past 20 years in chipping away at it. But for the time being, like that, when we talk about, especially for state legislators that have so much power over elections for both state, federal, local elections and who can qualify and who can vote, we need to, at the front of the conversation, be prioritizing how can we reform our democracy so that we can diminish the influence of out-of-state, out-of-district, big money, special interest money, dark money, but also we can empower more people to vote, and we can empower people from diverse experiences and backgrounds to run for office in the first place. So I am a beneficiary of these amazing reforms that voters did, you know, again, when I was still a kid, but generationally, like, that's the impact that we want to see, and that's the impact that we want to have.
So it sounds like one reason why people should run for office is not just for their next term in office, for the next 2 or 4 years or 6 years, but to hopefully run and create similar reforms in other states so that more people like you or different than you may have an opportunity that is may seem out of reach today.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And, you know, I, as a state legislator, I take a lot of hard votes. And, you know, as a Democrat and as a progressive Democrat in a chamber that's still controlled by Republicans, although there's only 29 Democrats and 31 Republicans, so we are on the precipice of taking a majority. But in the environment where Republicans get to set the agenda, like, yeah, there's some tough votes that I have to take. And for me, especially, you know, running clean is so empowering because, again, when I think about my donors and I think about the people who I rely on to fund my campaign, it's not the lobbyists, it's not the special interests, like it's the people I'm elected to represent. So I'm fortunate in that I can make the votes in such a way where in my head and in the conversations and in the decision-making process that I have, it's always about what's best for the people of Arizona, what's best for my district, what's best for the most vulnerable in our state, in our society. And what's more important to me is like not taking votes to protect my next election. Like, you know, politicians have been doing that for way too long.
Right.
But to me, like, in order to have that generational impact, like, we have to be bold and we have to govern as if this is our only term and this is our only shot. And I feel like that's part of the reason why, even though I'm in the minority, I've been able to get a lot done. And part of the reason why my Democratic colleagues elected me in my second term to be a part of the Democratic leadership team and being the youngest person on that team. But it's that leadership and it's that kind of vision and ideal for Arizona that I think is what ultimately sends me back to the Capitol every year.
Yeah, you know, I'm on just my local borough council, and not to say just, because every election's important, but my friend Kyle is our council president, and I'm so glad he is, because he's able to take the time and energy that will be harder for me to do. We don't have the tough votes that you do, but I imagine that similarly, your colleagues may look to you and say, you know, she's willing to be the bold leader and be aggressive on these things. Not that I don't want to be a leader. Everyone that runs wants to be a leader, but that's a person we need to be leading because they're going to, lead. They're not going to just take what we say. They're going to just move us forward in the legislature.
Yeah. And you know, to your point about being on a borough and a municipal, those are tough votes too. I don't want to underplay that because like your role, like there's so much equity work that cities and towns can have the potential to do. And like, you know, for everyone, I'm so glad that you have this podcast because for everyone that's listening, like there, if you are interested in running for office, like there is a position for you. And we need people looking at the problems and the challenges that we face from a different lens and who have the courage to, I mean, I'm sure you've taken votes that upset people, but what I have also found is that voters respect when you explain where you're coming from. They might not agree with you, and I've had constituents disagree with where I've fallen on certain positions and issues, but at least they're like, okay, well, her explanation, I understand why she got to that point, and I appreciate that within that process, she's thinking about what's best for our state and what's best for the people.
Yeah, I found myself, and you've won re-election too, right?
Right, yep.
I found that winning re-election was so much more affirming and exciting than winning my first election, especially when I won by a bigger margin. I knew what I was getting at, and it's been more enjoyable, even with some really hard things that have happened, doing that, knowing I had the backing of people as opposed to just saying, yeah, we'll give you a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So one thing that really drew me to wanting to talk with you, aside from Ashley's endorsement, is I have noticed that there's one state, and this is new since your video that I saw, that has a majority female legislature, and that is one that's close to you, Nevada. You're trying to get more people of different backgrounds, especially women and young people and people of different races and beliefs to run for office. Why is that so important, especially now, I think?
Well, I appreciated what you said, and I appreciate you like acknowledging the fact that the world we live in was really built for people like you and not for people like me. I mean, it's like, just being on the floor yesterday and seeing how many times the Republicans interrupted women, shut down women's debate, challenged and questioned, and I'm talking like breaking the rules, like, but because they have a majority, like, you know, we protest, we challenge, we try to overrule the ruling of the chair, but it is so hostile, not only towards the minority party, but towards women. Like, even once we're in there, like, we still face a lot of challenges to just be treated like half as good as a man is treated, right? Like, it's pretty insane. And like, my first term, I was one of the women that spoke out against one member's sexual harassment, and eventually he ended up being expelled from the legislature because of the hostile environment that he was creating. But, you know, we have to be in these positions of power, because if people never see a diverse makeup within their government leading oftentimes more competently than what's the status quo, right? But even just like matching what was previously there, then we're never going to get there. We're never going to achieve full equality. And so, like, there's like, on the one hand, there's the just public image and the, you know, yes, we can, if I see it, I can be it effect that happens. But then on the inside, like, you know, I know for a fact that I have shifted the conversation and I have changed policy priorities because of experiences that I've had that is unlike and unique to anyone else in all 90 people, or I guess it's 90 people total, so compared to the 89 other people I work with, and it's exclusively because of me. And I think so many of my colleagues have a similar experience because they bring their own uniqueness and their own set of priorities to the table. So if we keep electing people from the same communities, from the same background, from the same sex or gender, then I have found in my organizing work, especially when I was starting as a college student, is you're relying on people who, it's like, okay, I'll make this a priority out of the goodness of my heart, but not because I am physically or emotionally harmed every single day by the inequalities that exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really have a choice. Like, I do have a choice. My choice is to do nothing and ignore it and hope that it gets better passively, right? Passive hope. Or I can be a leader, have a vision that our democracy can lead to some amazing changes, and in spite of all that's against me, I can still push and persevere at the end of the day. And that's, you know, I think that's what keeps me going. That's what makes it worth it. And honestly, if we didn't have people like that in Arizona, we would not have gone from 2010 Republicans being in the supermajority in the legislature to 2020 Republicans hanging on by one vote. You know, it's taken a lot of people with that attitude and mentality and belief that we can have a government of, for, and by the people.
That brings me to the one thing I definitely want to touch on. I know you have a very tough schedule there today, but Arizona is now considered to be maybe the most important state in 2020. And that's something that people wouldn't have predicted 10 years when you started getting involved. Do you feel hopeful in Arizona? And I don't just mean about the presidential race. I just mean about the direction of politics in your state as everyone seems to watch it across the country.
You know what I've been telling people in my district and people I meet throughout my state is how fortunate we are to live in Arizona at this moment. Because, like, if you live in California, I mean, absolutely participate in the presidential election and participate up and down the ballot, right? But California has so many Democrats registered there that whoever wins the general election nominee who's a Democrat is likely going to win that state. The same is true of Kentucky, but for Republicans, right?
Oh, poor Kentucky.
And what's so amazing about living in Arizona, and When I was a girl and, you know, growing up, I grew up in a pretty conservative part of Arizona, Northeast Phoenix. I was pretty white, middle class, conservative. You know, my family's first generation. The kids I went to school with were multi-generation, don't remember when their family came to America. And so, like, even from that experience, I got used to just being otherized and used to being different and used to my perspective just completely being diminished just because of who I was. And so what I tell the voters in Arizona is, you're very special. You are very special because you live in one of the states that when you cast your ballot for the President of the United States of America, you will be choosing who that person is. If in Arizona, a Republican wins Arizona, our electoral college, then likely a Republican will become the United States president. If in Arizona, a Democrat wins our state, then the Democrats will likely win the presidency of this great nation. And I remind people the fact, like, people died for this right. And people had to die for this right. And not in the sense that they had to die, but the reason that people were so scared of black people and brown people and women and people with disabilities and Native Americans and religious minorities, the reason that they were so scared of them having full access to our democracy is because they know in a democracy, one vote is equal to every other vote that is cast, regardless of who was the person that filled out that ballot. And if it wasn't powerful, and if voting didn't matter, I am not only the House Democratic Whip, I am the ranking member on the Democratic Committee, or I'm sorry, on the Elections Committee, then why in my four short years being in the Arizona legislature, why has every single legislative session the Republicans try to pass bills, and some successfully, some bills we have been able to kill, but they have passed a lot of legislation in just my 4 years being here, trying to make it harder for people to vote. And I know the amount of sacrifice, I know the amount of work, the blood, sweat, and tears the good people of Arizona have had to do, specifically in black and brown communities, have had to do to get Arizona in this position when people 10 years ago would have never, myself included, right? I am fortunate that I am the product of following other leaders and other leaders believing that I could be a leader. That's the only reason. I mean, that's the biggest reason why I'm here. And so, like, we can't mess this up. Like, we can't take this for granted. And part of that process and part of inspiring other people to run is having people, like the people listening to your podcast, taking it upon themselves and running for office and inspiring their local community to vote for something. Vote for something good. It's all of us working together. And so I'm very excited to be living in Arizona. I am excited that my vote will be potentially choosing the next United States president. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that you have the show. So in the future, we'll have even more people running for office and inspiring their local communities to get out there and to vote and participate in our democracy.
Great. I that's wonderful. Not only can you choose the next president, but you could very well choose the next Senate Majority Leader, too, this time. And
yeah, that's right.
You're doing a lot of important work, and I hope the world is paying attention to Arizona. I have been very inspired listening to your story. I really hope that other people who are listening and paying attention to your work will also be inspired to run for office in some of these challenging races across the country and get some more representation out there, so that we have, more voices being heard. So thank you so much. I know you have other things going on today, and I want to be respectful of that. If people are interested in following Arizona and following your work, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah, great question. So for listeners who are on social media, feel free to follow me. My Instagram and Twitter handles are Athena Salman, AthenaSalman. And on Facebook, if you type in Representative Athena Salman, you can find my page there. My contact information is also on the Arizona Legislative Government website. Both my office email and my office phone number. So you can contact me there. And a lot of people don't know, in some local offices, even for state legislature, like a state like mine, it is myself who manages my social media account. So most of the time, if you tweet at me or if you message me, it's me who's looking at it. So fun fact, I'm sure it's like that for you as a city council member as well. But yeah, no, definitely reach out, share your stories with me. And I really hope that, you know, for those of you listening, I inspire some future run for office someday. And listening to Tony's podcast in general, I'm sure you're getting a lot of great folks on the line to run for office and to inspire others to do so as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I recorded two today, you and a state representative from South Dakota, both women under 40, and both people doing some incredible work. So every race matters. Please follow Athena Salmon on every social media. Follow what she's doing. Arizona is important, but more importantly, the voice that she's bringing is important. So thank you so much. And maybe you should run for office too.